With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Taco Palenque fans, we have something special for you. Try the Casero Taco now for only $2.75 Monday through Thursday. Flavor packed with premium sirloin rice and refried beans. Only at Taco Palenque. At participating locations for limited time, not valid for delivery. Other restrictions may apply.
From a highly secure network of top secret locations across South Texas, this is the Spurs Insider, brought to you as always by Taco Palenque. I'm your host, Mike Finger, joined by our panel of Express News Spurs beat writers Jeff McDonald and Tom Orsborn, along with sports editor Nick Talbot. This is the white and the knuckles. This is the gold and the buckle. This is a thing we call the Rodeo Road Trip Edition of the Spurs Insider. Everybody's excited. I think we got 9 games this year. I think it's 5 games before the All-Star break, 4 games after. We're going to split it up. The road trip, the rodeo road trip between 3 of us on the road, 2 at a time. Tom, Jeff, and I will be in all these cities across America. What are you looking forward to most about this sojourn, Tom Orsborn?
Across North America. We're even venturing into Canada, Mike.
That's true.
Yes, yes. Well, I don't...
Are you ready?
I don't offer very many hot takes, as you guys know, but... Not a big fan of the hype that goes around the rodeo road trip with the All-Star game, All-Star weekend breaking it up. It's really not that grueling. You know, as they pointed out today, Doug McDermott, wise sage of the Spurs, that, you know, they've already had some pretty long trips this year. You know, the rookies are used to it. All capital letters there. But, yeah, I mean, it's just not that – it's not that big a deal when you look at it. You know, the All-Star break splits it up, and that's a good downtime for them.
So it's not going to be that grueling. It's nine games. How many wins?
Ah, now there's the rub. I don't know.
I'm setting the over-under at 1.5.
Yeah,
that aforementioned. Do you take the over or under?
The aforementioned trip to Canada may provide that one victory, which, as Jeff pointed out this morning, they may not want to get.
So it's the over. I set the over under 1.5. Are you for sure taking the under?
You know me, Mike. I'm an optimist. I'll take the over.
The over. Jeff, you can weigh in.
Like, maybe that trip's not as grueling as it looks on paper, but it's still 9 games away from home in a row.
Yeah. Yeah,
like you don't play a home game from February the 4th to February the 29th. And the legs, like, the first leg is 9 nights. Like, they're gone for 9 nights. That's a pretty lengthy road trip. And yeah, you do get the All-Star break in between, but then you're gone for another 7 nights, which is also a lengthy road trip in this day and age. So it's not 9 games in a row on the road. You know, when you think of it as broken up by the All-Star break, but it's still 2 very long road trips in a row, and it keeps you out of your home building for a long time. So it's really, yeah, it's tough for a young team, especially, to deal with that.
Some just guys want to be away. They want to get away from the pressures of home.
Are we talking about players? Are we talking about writers?
Playing in front of their home. Playing in front of their home fans.
I think we're talking about Trey Jones. He doesn't, now everyone knows where he lives.
Yeah.
He's got to get out of town.
I'm putting the big questions to the panel early. We usually like to save this for later, but Tom already weighed in over 1.5. What do you have there, Jeff?
I mean, I can't legitimately sit here and say it's going to be over. Like, who are they? I mean, sure, they could. They beat Minnesota, so they've shown that they can beat a good team. But if you're asking me to, like, you know, you're not asking me to put money on it. But if you were, it's hard to see them winning. It's hard to really feel good about them winning more than one of those.
Yeah, I think I go under Nick Nick, what do you got?
Yeah, I just pulled up the schedule to double check to see if I see another win in there, maybe anywhere. And yeah, no, I'm taking the under.
All right. Miami hasn't been playing great. They had lost several in a row. They've sort of seemed to have gotten it together. So they haven't been playing great. And the Lakers, you almost never know what you're going to get with them. Like, sometimes they look like world beaters. Sometimes they look like...
I thought at the Lakers as maybe the number, the second most likely.
That is a back-to-back.
Spurs do better. They do better out west. Two wins in Phoenix, one in Portland.
There you go.
So, okay. I mean, maybe there's one to sneak in there. But if you're talking about teams where you really feel good going in with them being competitive, like from the outset, Toronto is the one.
1-8, I think, is the most likely record here. This could look stupid in a few weeks, but yeah. 1.5 is the number, and I'm sort of torn. I could go one way or the other, but I'd probably go under.
They do have a better road record than they do at home.
That's true.
Barely. 5-19 versus 5-21, both riveting.
Helped greatly by those back-to-back wins in Phoenix.
Oh, so long ago.
What if, so long ago. Okay, when we thought we were going to be working till June.
Does your over-under change if the Spurs traded for, like, Trae Young before Thursday?
I think we'd have to. We're going to get end of trade deadline stuff, and we're going to have...
Is it the trade deadline, or is it the trade deadline?
I think it could work either way. They're not going to trade for Trae Young this week.
I know. I'm being goofy.
But I'm just worried about one of the members of our podcast here heading into this week, who I know there's a lot of stuff weighing on his mind. He could lose a really, really, really Thanks. Close. He could really a close confidant, source, friend, just admirer. Like, Tom, how are you going to deal with it if the Spurs lose Doug McDermott?
Yikes. We talked about that this morning. Doug had some great stuff about why he wears a mouth guard, and had a good little quip in there that had to do with the tooth fairy. You don't get that from every player.
Yeah.
I'd hate to see him go. I mean, and he went to great lengths to describe how much he likes this, not only, you know, in terms of the now, but for the future. He feels like he's, you know, going through kind of a training for possible post-career life in basketball. Yeah. So, I'd hate to see him go. But we've lost a lot of good guys that we all liked.
Isn't Normandy.
Yeah. It's not.
For Tom, though.
Like, it kind of is.
It kind of is.
Are we ready to talk trade deadline? Is that what we're doing right now?
It's a natural momentum. Natural segue. You have
Boris Diaw Great Segue Award again.
There you go. The Doug McDermott is an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season, which is one reason why we mention him. Your Jetty Osman is an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season. Those seem like the two guys who winning teams might value for one reason or another. Other players who are not guaranteed to be Spurs beyond this year. You got your Sandro Mamu Kelishvili, who will be an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year. I don't think that Devontae Graham, another close buddy of Tom Orsborn, he doesn't have guaranteed money past this year. He's got a contract for next year, but I'm not sure anybody is beating down Brian Wright's door to trade for him. But those are the guys who aren't guaranteed, who don't have the guaranteed money that next year. Julian Champagne might not either, but it's so cheap. It's like $3 million. You figure he'll be back. But those are the guys that would make Spurs sellers. Yeah. Now, were you going to talk Spurs sellers or Spurs buyers?
Sellers. I think, you know, despite what I read on the social media and the website that's ruining the universe, I think most Spurs fans are...
ExpressNews.com?
ExpressNews.com.
That's not ruining the universe. It's got some great stuff on it. Go ahead.
I think despite what I read on those places, I think that most Spurs fans are pretty savvy, and they understand the Spurs aren't making moves at this deadline in order to get better for the 2023-24 season. This season, they're not trying to make this year's team better. Any move that they're going to make is going to be with an eye towards making future teams better.
Correct.
Now, are there moves that might show up that accomplish both goals? Possibly, you know, if there's a deal out there. I saw some reporting out there just before we started this podcast that the Spurs might be interested in Tyus Jones from mm-hmm. Washington. So, like, that would be a move, I think, that would check both the boxes. But mostly, I think you're looking at the Spurs, seeing what they can get for some of those veterans that you just mentioned. And I think the three that they will definitely listen on are Doug, Jetty, and Devontae. And as you mentioned, Devontae, having played in 10 games this year, teams probably aren't beating down the door, but I think he could be part of a different deal that if it, you know, just to make math work. I mean, that's how he got here in the first place.
Right.
Nobody was beating down New Orleans' door for him last year, but that's how he got here in the first place. So I think it's those three guys are the guys you're looking to quote unquote sell. Of the three, Doug is the only one that's here of his own volition. Like it was technically a sign and trade with Indiana, but he was basically came here during free agency a couple years ago. The other two, like I, you know, you wouldn't feel bad for those guys if they got moved to a situation that where they're in Devontae's case, where he actually gets to play, which mm-hmm. Which I wrote about today after speaking to Devontae, like he would welcome that sort of thing. Or like in Jetty's case, you know, go play for somebody that's winning games. And I think Doug too, we talked to Doug today at practice and he's always going to say the right thing and he's happy to be here and would love to stick around. He says he would love to stick around beyond this week. And as Tom mentioned, part of the reason he's even in San Antonio, he said, is not really even playing basketball reasons, but he'd like to absorb some of the coaching and the front office acumen and things like that for when he moves on to a post-playing career. Like that's a big reason why he wanted to come here in the first place. But all that said, if he were to get to move to a contender, you'd feel happy for him too. You know, he's getting up there in his, he's 10 years into the league now, and he's a long time vet. And, you know, time's running short for guys like that. And you would like to see if you can get them into a situation where they're, you know, not playing out the string on a 15, 16 win season and are actually playing for something come spring and summer. You'd feel good for that guy if the Spurs could pull that off. And obviously the Spurs, if they could get any kinds of assets to help pull that off, it would help them as well. So that's kind of the things I would be looking at over the next couple of days. The trade deadline, I don't know if we said it out loud, but it's Thursday. It's Thursday afternoon. So,
yeah. This is kind of obvious too, but you know what those three guys you mentioned also have in common.
Three guys to have never been in my kitchen.
Exactly, Cliff. That reference is going to go way past the heads of most of the Zoomers and the young millennials and kids.
Because they like tomatoes. They like food with tomatoes in them. They
now we are crossing. This reference has gone from Cheers to Jeopardy to Jeff's palate, which I don't want to talk about this week.
From Cheers to Jeers.
Cheers to Jeers. We've lost all the Zoomers. On the Zoomers are a big part of our listening audience. We got analytics on that. Like, they like us and Taylor Swift.
Let's talk about Taylor Swift. We can do that.
Well, no, what I was going to say, those three guys have never been in Jeff's kitchen or Cliff Clavin's kitchen. And they're the three oldest guys on the team. Like, they're the only three guys on the team that are over, I believe, 26. Jetty's 28.
Devontae's
28. And Doug is 30.
Douglas is 31, I believe. 31, 30, 32?
He might be 32. So you already have the youngest team in the league. And next week, it could be even younger. Where that would leave, I believe, Zach Collins, who seems like it was just at Gonzaga yesterday.
He's a gray beard at 26.
As the oldest guy on the team. Full-time guy. Like there's a two-way. Diakite might be a little older. But Zach would be the oldest full
guy. Depends on who you get back in potential trades. So.
That's true, too.
And like, if you don't get anyone back and you just have a roster spot, Gorgui Jang is right there.
That's true. That's true. Still in playing shape. I guess I'm not sure where you guys want to go from here, but when you look at, if we're talking about trading guys at this year's trade deadline, maybe acquiring somebody who could be of use next year. One thing that we haven't discussed a lot and that probably doesn't get mentioned enough is the Spurs are going to continue to be young. They're going to add more draft picks. The players they're going to target are going to be younger players who can help them, you know, 3-4 years from now at Victor's peak. But I still think you need Doug McDermott, Jetty Osman types, Devontae Graham types in your locker room. There will be more of those. Like, they're not just going to sign 23 and 24-year-olds this offseason. They're not just going to sign for – they're not just going to trade for guys who overlap with Victor's window. You need an old guy in the locker room.
That's why I would also maybe be surprised if they traded all three of those guys.
Right. This week. Yeah.
Really, you don't have to trade any of them unless they get something for them. But what do you think, honestly, are they going to get?
It's a good point. And do we care about picks anymore? Like, maybe we do. But the Spurs have more than they can make already.
Just keep adding them up. Just keep collecting them like Sam Presti did up in Oklahoma City.
How many?
What does that guy know anyway? Like, what does he accomplish, Sam Presti?
You want to talk about a turnaround that happened quickly, man. Weren't they in the running for Victor last year?
No. Playing team last year.
Right, but they had a chance. They were thinking they had
you mean going
balls.
Into the season?
What?
Oh, you said they had lottery balls.
Yeah.
Well, sure, but they won 30-something games last year.
I'm just saying. Now they're the best team in the West.
Yeah, they've done a good job.
That happened quickly. That's an inspiration to the local Cagers that it can happen that quickly.
What they need to do is trade Paul George for a future all-star who's 22 at the time.
Okay. If you just want to the what-if game. And I thought about this the other day. The trade going back to, and people hate bringing up Kawhi over and over and over again. But one trade that was out there reported as available. I can't confirm.
I know what you're going to say.
The one trade that was out there before Kawhi was traded to the Clippers, or before he was traded to the Raptors, was Kawhi for the Clippers had two picks. One was forgettable. The other one was rememberable because it was a guy who's first team all-star, maybe first team all NBA this year, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Now, I think I'm just going to throw it out there. Knowing what you know now, would you do that deal and be building around Shai, knowing that probably means you don't have Victor Wembanyama?
What if questions are tough with the Spurs now.
But you're close. Basically, you could be close to what Oklahoma City is now, which is already like the best team in the West. Man, or do you just say, but you don't have Victor Wembanyama, who could rule the NBA for the next decade?
That's
it's sort of a bird in the hand, one in the bush type of thing.
Yeah, that changes the next draft picks though, and that's where those things, the what ifs get. Like, do you still have Jeremy? Do you still have
right? It's not simple.
So it's not a simple question. Like,
you could basically have all, like, if you play it back, you could have all of the Oklahoma City picks. You basically just become Oklahoma City. You have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and like two Jalen Williamses and Chet Holmgren. Like, would you rather be Oklahoma City? The question is, would you rather be Oklahoma City today or the Spurs? And I think
I would accept arguments on both.
I would too. I think Oklahoma City is probably, I think to the neutral observer, they would probably pick Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Because they're already good and they're going to continue to be good.
The Spurs just have a really special guy. Would you rather be Oklahoma City 5 years from now or the Spurs 5 years from now?
That's the question.
That's the next question. So I don't know. I could listen to arguments on both ends of that.
It's really interesting.
Really depends on the next 5 years and what they do with their picks. Oklahoma City hit almost their picks, right? I mean, most of those guys are all doing well. They've chosen.
Well, one thing that I think is instructive from Oklahoma City is they had so many picks that you can bust on a few.
Right.
Like, they have some guys in there that are like, oh, that was a bust.
Yeah.
But they have enough that were really, really good, and some that are really, really good.
They still have more coming.
And we still have more coming.
Quite a few, actually.
They don't trade them for something even better.
Another thing that, and I'm saying this not trying to be critical or at all. I just find it amusing. Winning the lottery sort of makes Brian Wright and R.C. Buford and Greg Popovich bulletproof in terms of every move they made that didn't work the last few years. Because you can say like, oh, they should have taken Tyrese Halliburton over Devin Vassell. Oh, they should have got more for Derek White. Oh, whatever. But like their answer to all that is, yeah, but then we wouldn't have Victor. So every move that didn't work or that is that you could criticize over the past, 5 years, they can just say, yeah, well, that led us to Victor. And they sort of have a point.
Yeah. You know what they say? Everything happens for a reason.
Is that what they say?
It's serendipity. It's a higher power, if you believe in that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
it's fair. And a lot of their other stuff didn't work out. I mean, you look at the drafts and everyone. I mean, Devin worked out to an extent, but I mean, he's not Tyrese. And, you know, obviously Josh Primo was Josh Primo.
That's how genius they are. They realize uh-huh. that if any of this works out, they don't get Victor Wembanyama.
Another thing, and Nick's brought this up before, and they're almost a victim of their own long running tradition of success in the draft, in that their draft bus, and they've had their quote unquote bus because in a lot of these cases, there's a better player they could have taken. Is that a bust because you could have taken a better player? Because a lot of these guys, like Primo, clearly bust. But Devin Vassell is a productive NBA player. It's hard to call him a bust. Like many, many teams that have picked in the top 10 over the past 5, 10, 20 years end up taking guys who end up out of the league in a few years, who never become rotation players, starters, what have you. The Spurs misses are better than a lot of teams' hits. They're just not perfect hits. Like clearly, you know, Halliburton was the choice there. There's some Malachi Branham, Blake Wesley, maybe second thoughts in there somewhere. Although both of those guys still could become productive players.
We're getting off on a tangent now, but I did this the other day just because I was wondering, and you look at those drafts, and again, it's only the second year of a lot of these guys, but there aren't a lot of guys
right
taken after Malachi that you would be like, yeah, they should have definitely taken that guy.
I agree.
There weren't a lot of guys taken after Blake Wesley where you're like, oh, they should have definitely taken that guy.
The Spurs were just so incredible for so long at training fans to think that if you have a first round pick, even if you're picking 29th, 27th, 24th,
they were really good at 29.
The guy should become a borderline all-star, a long-running starter. Like they got productive NBA players from the 20s over and over and over again. And even these late picks, you know, Vassell, Jeremy Sohan, I'm probably forgetting a couple. They become rotation numbers. Go ahead. Kelton Johnson.
What was Luka? Was he 20?
19.
He was 19.
He was
19. And honestly, you could have just, I think we all agreed at the time of the draft way back when, that they could have just flipped those two picks and no one would have batted an eye that Kelton could have got 19.
Right. Luka and Kelton. Right.
At the time, I believe Luka was their first top 20 pick since Tim Duncan, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only real bust, like we say, is Primo. And that's, they kind of reached out for him just on basketball talent. And I think most of the pundits and myself included thought they were going to take Alperen and Gunn, which, you know, looks bad in hindsight.
But if they do, they don't have Victor Wembanyama.
That's the brilliance of it. We haven't talked about, we've been looking forward at the rodeo trip. We've been looking forward at the trade deadline. We've been looking forward at team building. Generally on this podcast, we look back at the week that was. I guess it was just so forgettable, so unremarkable.
That Collins got hit in the face. That was interesting.
What about that New Orleans game? It was entertaining.
Remind us, Tom.
Lot to chew about on the finish there with Devin taking the 30-foot three with 3.8 seconds left. The play started Wemby breaks after setting the screen, breaks to the basket. He's open. Broke to the basket with about 2.7 seconds left. Did Devin make the right choice? Taking the 30-foot?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Boy, you're
just trying to
just yeah. down there. I yeah, mean, you... I probably not. I also think, like, what's killing these guys is this bird's eye view camera, like this game view camera, where mm-hmm. everything looks so wide open. Mm-hmm. But it's as those of us that have actually, you know, played the game on the floor before, even in our tiny levels, know, like, not everything is so freaking obvious when yeah. there's like bodies in the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know?
And so when we were talking, on
the one hand, at least in that situation, they got a shot off. It probably wasn't the one they wanted. I mean,
which,
I know.
By the way, as Tom can attest, Tom probably knows where I'm going with this. Before that play was ran, what did I say, Tom? Like, it would be a success if they get a shot.
If they got a shot off.
because for those of you out there who think that this podcast doesn't criticize the local cagers enough, I think it's fair to say that, I don't know how blunt I want to be with this. In recent years,
Pop hasn't drawn up winners like that.
In Pop's septuagenarian years, the ATO plays have not been as good as they were with Tim and Manu and Tony. that used to be his bread and butter.
Just let me finish.
His bread and butter, and it wasn't just because he had Tim and Manu and Tony. Like,
I think that's
like
a big part of it, though.
It probably was a big part of it, but they were. I mean, it's chicken and the egg, but yeah. it seemed like whenever those guys, let's just put them all together, those three guys and Pop could go to the sideline, call a timeout. When they were coming out of timeouts, they were getting incredibly good looks. Over and over and over again. Like, they were, that the Spurs were really good out of timeouts for a long time. They were really good out of timeouts when they had Kawhi Leonard. Like, in recent years, that has not been a strength of your local Cagers at all.
It's easier to call plays when you have like four Hall of Famers to run them.
Of course. Of course.
Good Lord. So the play at the end of the New Orleans game.
But
was
anyway,
a good play. Like, if that if you had Manu throwing to Tim Duncan, that's a dunk. Game over.
Well, my point was that
players didn't execute it, but you don't blame the players for not executing it because they have not been in this position a lot.
You're not letting me make my point was.
Is your point? Go ahead.
How can I make it if I keep getting interrupted? I told Tom as they're coming out there, like, there's a good chance they might not even get a shot off.
Or
the ball in bounds. So many in recent years, and it's not just a matter of not having Hall of Famers. Like, NBA players should be able to get the ball in bounds and get a shot at the basket in a lot of these situations. And the Spurs have struggled in that area. And so the fact that they got the shot that Devin got, like, they've got the ball in bounds to one of their two best players, and that player had a clean look from 30 feet, like, that was a success in my book compared to how bad they've been after time out of timeouts. And like, you run it back and Wemby's rolling to the rim, and he probably should make that pass there. And I also think that when Tom asked the question of Pop, like, this didn't translate that well in text or on the terrible website, that, like, his tone there. Tom asked Pop, did you like the shot you got? And Pop, absolutely yes. Like, he was sort of answering it the, like, in my mindset, we got a shot, we got a clean look, yes, of course. And then before, like, somebody else was about to ask a question, Tom, and he actually jumped in and he said, like, we like to have a pass to the rim and a dunk, that would be better, but I like the shot we got. And so
without the benefit of seeing the replay a couple of times before we even asked that question, it came across a little bit as his trademark sarcasm there.
Right. Yeah. No, he was just being like, he was. Yeah. And so when that answer gets typed up and disseminated into the world, next to the screenshots of Wimby being wide open, it's taken as Pop is bashing Devin Vassell for not making that pass, when really he was just being a smartass to Tom. You know what I mean? Well, I didn't take it at all.
He wasn't being a smartass, and he wasn't bashing Devin at the same time.
Right. He was sort of being a smartass. Go ahead.
I think he was clearly saying, yeah, that's what we wanted to happen, but he said he was okay with it, and he was. The replay, his reaction on the sideline. Yeah, he didn't do anything. There wasn't the head drop or the hands to the forehead like he does occasionally. And it wasn't a bad shot. You want him eventually. He's got to hit those. You know, that's something every Spur fan, I think, and everyone in the organization wants to see. So, you know, to get there, he's got to take those kind of shots.
He probably should have made the pass. But
and I think another thing, sorry, Jeff, you got to factor in, he got that contract, and he desperately wants to, you know, make good on it. And who can blame him for that?
You have your second best player.
He should probably make the pass. But
yeah,
what are the percentages the pass gets there?
Mm-hmm.
In time, beats the buzzer. Like, is it 50-50? Is it better than 50-50? Is it less than 50-50? If it's anywhere south of 50-50, then taking that shot isn't so bad either, you know?
What's really ridiculous is to sit there and say, oh, he doesn't like Wemby.
Or
There's friction between them. The next game, he has a beautiful feed, a beautiful lob pass to Wimby for a dunk. I mean, he's second on the team in lob passes that Wimby's slammed down. So
the thing that's driving me a little nuts is the screenshots of every time they miss him.
Yeah,
because it's just going to happen sometimes.
Yep.
It's not like they're not looking for him all the time. It's not like they're ignoring him. It's not like they're just so stupid they can't figure this out. It's just every so often in the course of the game, in the fog of a game, so to speak, you're going to miss some of these. Like I've said before, why did you miss that fastball down the middle of the plate? Why didn't you crush it out of the park? Well, because sometimes you miss. Sometimes you usually just miss. So I'm just getting a little tired. Wimby's usage right now, usage rate, not to call it analytics on everybody, but it's right up there with like everybody in the league you'd expect. Yeah. Like, it's not like they're ignoring him. It's not like they're not letting him cook. So I think we just need to calm down every time they miss him.
That's He's got Embiid Jokic like usage stats.
Yeah.
He's been a center.
I think we just need to calm down every time they don't do it exactly how we think they should. And again, I'll point it out, it looks easier on TV than it is at floor level.
Like, a couple of things we've seen over the past, as Jeff says, the usage rate has gone up. They've been looking for Wimby more. We've learned over the past couple of weeks, months, that even when you try to make those lobs, and there's games where it seems like all you got to do is lob it to the rim to the tall guy and he'll get it. Like, it's harder than it looks. The Spurs have struggled. There's no guarantee that if Devin throws that lob there that he gets it there, just because these guys have proven that it's not that simple. It seems like it should be, but it's not. Also, you have, your second best player, the guy who got the big contract, with 4 seconds, I think there was less than four, it might have been four, to get a shot off. You get the ball into him, you have an open look at a makeable range. Like, the process of making that decision there, do you sort of want Devin Vassell, if you're going to pay him all this money, to be a shooter, basically, to look for a shot?
This is going to sound counterintuitive, but it's almost like a credit to Devin that he took that shot. Because if he throws the ball to Wimby and it gets picked off or it gets knocked away or something bad happens, no one's going to blame him. No one's going to blame Devin for trying to throw that pass. Mm. You do get blamed for taking a shot and missing it. So in a weird way, you know, it took some guts,
some moxie.
Now, this maybe reminds, There's a line between moxie and foolishness, and that's kind of maybe what we're arguing. But I think it does say something about his willingness to take it instead of doing the easy thing, which would be to throw the ball to Victor and see what happens.
This is going to be, and I know people are going to scoff at what else is new. This is going to be extremely self-indulgent. But Jeff referenced his playing career earlier. He played with the great Jeff Foster, I believe, NBA, future NBA
I couldn't
player.
Throw him lobs either, by the way. It's freaking hard.
Yeah.
Just letting everyone know, even then.
Jeff was a 5A player. I was a 1A player. Class 1A basketball.
I'm laughing. You know why I'm laughing.
You're laughing at Mike Shirley anyway.
Yeah.
I was the second best player on the team my senior year. Again, it's 1A basketball. There were 14 people on my graduating class. This isn't like I'm claiming to be something I'm not. But I was the second best guy. And we're at the Brackettville tournament, 1995.
The famed Brackettville tournament.
The Brackettville tournament. It's the morning game. We're playing Brackettville. They set up the bracket where they're playing us in the first game because they think they're going to beat us. And I have what in retrospect you can look up the stats. The game of my high school career against Brackett. I had over 30 points in this game. I was unconscious. But I'm the second best player on the team. Ryan Redden is our best guy. And everybody knows it. And so even with me just shooting out of my mind and making everything I take, we're down by a point going into the last. It might have been the same situation, 4 seconds, but we're inbounding from under the basket as opposed to the elbow like the Spurs were the other day. So we go to the sideline. There's a timeout call. There's 4 seconds left. Bill Lovett, rest in peace, one of my favorite people of all time, my high school basketball coach and history teacher, who taught me much more about history than he did about basketball, but taught me a lot about both. Bill Lovett draws up a play for Ryan Redden, and the play is the entry pass comes to me, Mike Finger at the elbow, and then I pass down to Ryan Redden, and it would have worked. Like, Ryan Redden's going to back cut, and he's going to be open under the basket for a layup. We're going to get a layup to win. Okay. And so we go out there. Okay. Great. We go out there. The pass goes to me at the elbow. And what do you think I do? I take a shot and make it. and it's a fluke. I didn't make one. This is the only game winning shot I've ever taken. And I make it. The pass goes to me at the elbow. I shoot and I make it. And everybody goes crazy. And I'm jumping around and I run over to the sideline. And Bill Lovett is saying, You son of a B. You never were going to make that pass. And I said, no, of course I wasn't. But anyway, that's just my way of saying I feel for Devin there. Like, in the heat of the moment, I thought about, is Ryan open? Like, I think I can honestly say I thought about following the play and doing it. But I also turned and saw the rim. And I'm a shooter and shooters shoot. You know, and, I got the glory there.
You're a son of a gun. You're a son of a gun.
If you change some of those details and maybe the stakes, you just describe the Memorial Day miracle.
Is that right?
Yeah, David was wide open under the basket. Sean's just gunning.
That's true. Anyway, Devin Vassell, Sean Elliott, and Mike Finger all had that in common.
And also, they've never been in my kitchen.
Yes.
Anybody who doubts this story, there is a notebook. Here at the Express News that has the details just as Mike described them.
Yeah.
Thanks to John Hines.
Yeah. Also that night that we went into the second round, I committed the turnover that cost us the game. So I'm not just remembering the good. Like my glory from my shining basketball moment, my basketball career lasted approximately 6 hours.
I want to know right now, though, the great stuff on the basketball. What did you learn in history class?
For another podcast.
Okay.
But he was a great, great teacher. He taught government, civics, history.
Did they teach you the cause of the Civil War?
Yes, he did. And I think I understand that better than some candidates for high office. We won't go there. We've got rodeo coming up. We've got Jeff McDonald heading to Florida. Is that right?
That's correct. I have
speaking
to go.
Speaking of history,
close the state of Florida. Go ahead, Tom.
Speaking of altered history, he's headed to Florida.
He's heading to Florida.
Our history, yeah.
Two games this week against the Heats and the Magics. Then on up to, where would that be?
Brooklyn and Toronto.
Brooklyn and Toronto. Tom and I will have you covered there.
Then back to Dallas.
And at the end, after that Toronto game is played, I think we'll be checking in for another Spurs Insider. We'll check in with everybody. We'll have more updates. Maybe Tom can talk about his high school days. But until then, everybody, take care of each other and keep it real.